guest speaker told me, was weniger the introduction, the better. The less said, the better. I would like to take 3 unauthorized minutes before the less that I say about the guest speaker. I would just like to remark to Rav Fassman Shlita that your son, Rav Chaim, is a Briya Chatichon. You know, in the Kollel, there are 3 generations of Fassmans. There's the founder, Mishpachas Fassman, and there's the Rosh HaKollel, and there's the younger man. And Rav Chaim is the Briya Chatichon. And on Yom Kippur, the Hanhala of the Kollel stands together, and Rav Chaim stands in front of the Aron Kodesh, and on one side stands Rav Baruch Graydon Shlita with a Sefer Torah, and I stand on the other side with a Sefer Torah. Rav Baruch Graydon is the entire outreach program to this community on the Chelek of the Kollel. He's a Menayel inside and he's a Menayel outside. And he stands on one side of your son. And I stand on the other side. But the Hanhala is Shalem only because your son stands in the middle. And that's the Nachas. I don't know the guest speaker. We were introduced a little while ago. And so I can't say anything personally. And he wouldn't want me to anyways. But in very great preparation for introducing him, I decided to look at a sefer that came to my house at some time, which was written by the guest speaker about the Maggid, Rav Shadron. And while looking through it, my eye caught a phrase. And the phrase is, the Maggid's melody. In Tillim, there are melodies and there are songs. A melody is something about to become a song. A zemer is about to become a shira. The koyach of Rav Pesach Krohn is to take a zemer and to make it into a shira. And when he gives it to us as a shira, it makes the gedolim of the Friedrich Adiris alive to us. He's also a Briya Chatichon. He's also a Gesher through his words on paper, through the words that come from his lips. He's a Gesher for us. He sings the melody of the Maggid. And for that, we all of us, owe him a great, great debt. It's my privilege and to do our Pesach Krohn Shlita.
Before I begin, I would like to ask everyone a favor. If you know the family in Far Rockaway that I'm doing a bris for 7:45 tomorrow, don't tell them that I was on Los Angeles tonight and that I took the red eye and the plane's coming in at 7 in the morning. It's a great kavod to be able to come to this Kehillah Kedosha. I remember Rabbi Krauss. I am also one of the Talmidim of Torah Das, and I remember when he left Torah Das to come to Los Angeles to see this Kehillah Kedosha. to be together with Rav Chaim Fassman once again, for him to give me this cover to speak to all of you, is something that I deeply appreciate. The Torah tells us at the end of Parshas Beshalach, when Moshe Rabbeinu was about to pick out the soldiers who would fight against Amalek, he took Yehoshua, and the Pasuk tells us, Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua. Moshe said to Yehoshua, Bechar lanu anashim. Let's pick out people together. Me and you, we'll do it together. V'tzei hilochem ba'amalek. And then they'll go out and fight against Amalek. So Rashi picks up on the Lashon Bechar lanu. Moshe is talking to his Talmud Yeshua as an equal. Leave aloch, Rashi says. Me and you. Hashvei uloi. He made him an equal. And from here we learn a great lesson, says Rashi. Mikan omru yehi kevoi talmidach chaviv alecha kishalach. If you want to have success with a Talmud, the way you do it is you consider him an equal. You give him as much covet and dignity as much as you want to have for yourself. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to his Talmud as Yeshua as an equal. So Rav Hutner asks a very interesting kasha. This is an important lesson in education. This is an important lesson in transmitting Torah. What is it doing at the end of a shalach? It should be in Yisrael by Kabbalah HaTorah. It should be by the other mitzvahs of the Torah which talks about Limud HaTorah. Why is it dafka over here by the soldiers fighting Amalek? And he gives a brilliant answer. The answer is, he says in the very last pasuk in Beshalach, it says, Vayomer ki yod al keis ka milchama l'Hashem ba'amalek midor dor. The Eibishter maintains a war, a constant battle with Amalek from generation to generation. Direct Rav Hutner, who is Amalek today? Where is Amalek today? Where is the battle that we fight Amalek? Zok Rav Hutner, all those forces in the world that don't allow us to transmit Torah from one generation to the next generation, whether it's the immorality in the world, whether it's the secularism, whether it's the materialism, anything that doesn't allow us to transmit Torah to the next generation, that those influences are Amalek. Memela, Moshe Rabbeinu understood that in order to be able to transmit Torah from one generation to the next, there had to be a hashvah in kavod, and that's why he treated Yeshua as an equal. This is such an important lesson in chinuch. This is such an important lesson in parenting. And that's why I believe that today we have the Los Angeles Kailo. It is only because of the warmth and the ava and the love and the respect that Rav Oscar Fassman has and continues to have for all of his children, that he was able to set such a beautiful example by starting Kailolim, by being the president of a yeshiva that I had the opportunity to be in Chicago just a few weeks ago. It is just an unbelievable mokaim Torah what Rav Morgenstern has done with that yeshiva in Skokie. You would go there, you wouldn't recognize it. It's a mokaim Torah ad miyad. We had such an elevating Shabbos. And Rav Fassman happened to be there that Friday, and they told me it all started with him. How does it happen that a father is Margaret Torah into the ganze Welt, and his son does the same thing? That's when you have Yehi Kavoy Talmidach Chaviv Alecha Kishalach. And this is living proof that anything that we want to accomplish as Rebbeim, as Moros, or as parents, you look at this family and you see the Ava and the Achdus that they have one to another. That's why children follow in the direction of their parents. A number of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael. It was at the end of January, and it was in the middle of the campaign, the political campaign before the elections. And I must tell you, I was pained and I was shocked at the virulent hatred and the virulent anger against orthodoxy that was going on in the public campaigns, especially. You're not allowed to say Yimach Shemoy on a Yid, but whatever you can say is close to that for Tommy Lapid and his Shinui party. The open hatred for everything that's frum, for everything that we represent. On the way home from Eretz Yisrael, a fellow was sitting next to me and he told me an advertisement that the Shinui party had on television. It is absolutely not to be believed. They had a menorah that was lit with six candles. and a voice over behind said, Shabbos, and a candle was blown out. Kashrus, and a candle was blown out. Religious marriages, a candle was blown out. Deferments for yeshiva students, another candle was blown out. And that wasn't even the end of the advertisement. Then after all six candles are out, another voice says, free food selection for everyone in Israel. A candle goes back on. Service to the army, and a candle goes back on. Unrestricted weekends, and another candle goes on. Civil marriages, and another candle goes on. Waves of hatred, waves of rabble-rousing. And look what happened. They were able to inspire so many people in Eretz Yisrael that they were able with these waves to get 16 seats in the Knesset, which is unheard of, that a party should be able to double the amount that they had in one election. So how do we respond as Elul Hayyidin to that? So I'll tell you a fascinating Gemara and a beautiful way how you'll see how the Mashal learns the Gemara and something that Meir Shapiro once said. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, Rabbi Gamliel says he was once standing on a boat and the ocean, he was standing and he was looking out on the ocean and he sees that there's a boat out there that's about to break up and he recognizes in the distance that there's a man, there's a great tzaddik on that boat that's about to break up. That great tzaddik was Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Gamliel was mamish frightened and he knew that this is the end. How is Rabbi Akiva going to make it? That there were waves and waves in the sea and the boat was mamish breaking up. Rabbi Gamliel had no choice. There was no way he could go out there to save Rabbi Akiva. He comes back onto the shore and as he's walking around on the shore, he sees Rabbi Akiva is giving a shiur. He can't believe it. He saw Rabbi Akiva was on that boat and that boat was breaking up. So he says to Rabbi Akiva, how did it happen that you got saved? Listen to what Rabbi Akiva said. He said, me Helcha, my son, who is the one who saved you? Amalei, he said, Daf shel Svina Mizdamali. The Daf is the thing that saved me. Of course, literally what the Gemara means, that it was a board, like a raft, that board, that's why it's called a daf. So therefore, that's what he held on to, and that's what he came forward. But the Mashar and Rabbi Meir Shapiro understood it, that it's the daf that saved Rabbi Akiva. It's the daf that saves Klal Yisrael. And listen to what the Mashar says. What does it mean that there were so many waves? He says, B'chol dar v'dar, in every generation, Amdu aleinu, they stand up against us. She'ein gal sheni loymed min arishayin. One wave of hatred against Yiddishkeit. One wave of hatred against Orthodoxy doesn't learn from the previous one. Kach harishayim ein lemeidim min shelifneihem. Uboim kol echod l'chalois u'l'shatef et ha'olam v'Yisrael. No matter what happened in the previous generation, Klal Yisrael was able to exist. Klal Yisrael was able to survive. So you would think those that are against Yadus, those that are against Orthodoxy, they would give up the fight. Hey, so gone it done. There's always another way. There's always another way. Each one thinks they're going to outwit what the previous generation couldn't accomplish. And Mamela, how do we fight back? We fight back with the Daf. The Daf, the Gemara that you learn in the Koilo, the Gemara that these Koilo Yom Delight eventually go out and teach to the Gansavelt, whether it's in Shuls, whether it's in Kehillas, whether it's in Batim Midrashim, whether it's in Beit Yankos, it's the Torah and getting the message of Torah, the beautiful Drachea Darkei Noyam. When you get that out to the world, then all of a sudden, if we can only be Marbet's Torah and show the world Drachea Darkei Noyam, then you wouldn't have parties like Shinui. Then you wouldn't have people like Tommy Lapid. You wouldn't have people that would go off because they would see the beauty of what Torah is all about. Yesterday, we learned in Parshas Shkolim, and as one of the speakers mentioned before, we learned, of course you know that you're not allowed to count Yidden, and therefore you have to give the Machtas HaShekel. So the Pasuk tells us, V'nosnu ish koifer nafshoi. Every person has to give that Machtas HaShekel as an atonement for his soul. And there's a tremendous balaturim on this word V'nosnu. If you can just picture the word V'nosnu, Vav, Nun, Tav, Nun, Vav, it can be read forward and backwards. Does anybody know what those words are called in English? Palindromes, you're right. Just like the word radar, or my daughter Aviva, or the name David. Isn't it interesting that David is a palindrome and his father was also a palindrome? Yishai. So I was once in Eretz Yisrael and I was speaking to kids in elementary school. And I was trying to tell them this whole union of the Nosma, which I want to share with you in a moment. So one little kid says to me, oh, essentially Gamken, you know, he didn't say palindrome, but essentially he also thought it was that way. I said, what's your name? He said, Yitzi, Yud Tzadik Yud. But the idea is, the Baal HaTurim tells us, what do you learn from the fact that the word Venosno is a palindrome? And he says, in Tikra Enelam Afreya, if you can read it backwards, it's also Venosno. Loi Malach to tell you, Masha Adam Noisein Litztoka Yachzer Elof. When a person gives staka, it comes back. In other words, a person shouldn't think for a moment that when he gives staka that he's losing something. Adraba, v'lo yechzalei b'shvil zeklum, he's not going to be missing anything because of that. And that's what I want to talk about tonight, becoming giving people. When you give chizuk, when you give money, when you give time to someone, you shouldn't feel for a moment that you're losing. You're losing time. You're losing everything that you're giving away. Adraba. Chazal are teaching us, that Baal HaTurim is teaching us from the word Venosnu, that when you become a giving person, in a sense, the Eibishter makes it that you become a Makabel, and you get back, and even more, everything that you gave. And the truth is that if we look in davening, we find that the Rabbeinu Shalom is the greatest Noisein of all. We all know the Eibishter is the Noisein HaTorah. Every morning we say, Hashem Nosan Lasech Vivino Lahavchem Ve'yam Ve'en Loila. The Eibishter, according to one pshat, gives us in our heart the wisdom to understand between night and day what's good and bad, what's right and wrong. Hanoisen layoev koyach. The Eibishter gives us koyach to wake up every morning. Noisen lehemes ochlam be'itoy. And so therefore we have to become givers. Ma'u rachum, apatoye yei rachum. We have to be like the Rabbeinu Shleilam. If the Eibishter is a giver, we have to become givers. So I want to tell you something that happened to me in Manchester a number of years ago. I had the schus to be in that great city. That city today is an ir v'ein b'Yisrael. All the young couples that are getting married today, they don't go to Golders Green and Stamford Hill anymore. Everybody's going up to Manchester. They have more than 20 koilos in Manchester today. So what happens is, I'm there a few years ago, and I'm supposed to go speak for a whole audience of women. And somebody tells me, as I'm about to leave the place where I'm staying at, they say, you've got to go visit a certain woman on the way to your speech. I said, what do you mean? Who am I going to visit? I don't know anybody here. No, there's a lady, she's very, very sick, and it's a big rachmana, she's a big tzidkonius, and she gives shiurim, and she's brilliant, but never, she has MS, and multiple sclerosis, and she's in a wheelchair, her body is racked with pain, and if you go there, you'll give her chizuk, it'll be a wonderful thing. I said, I don't know the lady. What, I just, I'm going to walk into the house, I don't know her. They didn't let me alone, fine, okay, good, fine, so I'll go in. I come inside, it's a whole table, it's all set. The women are sitting around, the ones that are going to hear a shiur from her that night. And I wait a few minutes, and then from behind the curtain, she pulls apart the curtain and she wheels herself in to this room, to the dining room. She introduces herself, her name is Chavi Wachshal, Rebbe Chavi Wachshal. And she tells me, oh, thank you for coming, I know who you are, your books and tapes and all. She says, you know, I'm also writing a book. So I say, oh, that's very nice, what are you writing about? She says, I'll tell you the truth. I really want you to help me. I'll tell you what I'm writing about, but I want you to help me. I need a favor from you. I said, what are you writing about? She said, you should know that I've gone through tremendous tzaras and tremendous pain. And I'm not the wife that I'm supposed to be. And I'm not the mother that I'm supposed to be, that I was meant to be because of this illness. And many, many people, many gedolim, and she mentioned Rav Brevda's name, and Yibol L'chaim Rav Brevda, she mentioned Rav Segel's name. Many people came to her house to give her chizuk, because she's a very, very chosh of a woman. And she said she's writing a book of all the divrei chizuk that she got from many people, and from secular sources as well. So I said, well, that's beautiful, that's wonderful. So what can I do? I thought for sure she wanted that I should edit the book. She says, you know what I want from you? I want you to write me a letter. A letter, like haskama, approbation. I said, what do you mean? You need a big talmud chacham. You need somebody special. Who am I to write you a letter? And you know, I'm sitting there in front of everybody, and she's asking me to write this letter. How in the world am I going to say no to a lady like this? So I figured, oh, I know how I'm going to say no. I said like this, look, the book is not published yet, right? You have it in manuscript form. She says, right. So I said, you know what, why don't you send it to me in New York? I really don't have time to read it here. You send it to me in New York, I'll read it, and if I like it, I'll write you the letter. I figured, you know, I'll get back to New York, I'll look at it, a few pages, I'll call her up. It's easy, you know, from 6,000 miles away, whatever it is, it's easy to say no. Fine. I come back to New York, the manuscript's waiting for me. I cry every page. It's mamish tearing my heart out. The pain and the aggravation and the way she teaches Pesukim and the way Gedolim come to her. It's just unbelievable. That book is called Facing Adversity with Faith. It's published by Feldheim. I called her back. I said, Mrs. Wachschau, this is not a book. This is a Sefer Kodesh Ad Miyoid. And if you would even allow me to have anything to do with the book, it would be such a comfort for me that I should even have my name in such a book. Of course I'll write you the letter. If you think it's anything, I'll write you the letter. So of course I wrote her the letter. And then when I got the book, I read it again carefully. And there's one expression in that book that's worth the entire book. We must always remember this expression in every avenue of life that we're involved in. And she got this phrase of Chizuk, I don't know where she got it from, but listen to this. She writes, any fool can count the seeds in one apple. You don't have to be a big chacham, you cut an apple open and you can see how many seeds there are. But only the highest power, Hashem Himself, can count the apples in one seed. You know what that means? Sometimes you plant the seed of chizuk. Somebody is down, somebody is out, and they feel like nothing. They're sitting in the back of the shul. They had a bad week, they had an argument at home. And they feel they're not worth anything, and they're embarrassed to be there. And you go over, you put your arm around them, and you say, you look wonderful tonight. Good Shabbos, maybe you'll come over for dessert. And all of a sudden you give that person a chiyus, and it carries him. You didn't even realize it. You planted a seed and look how many apples grow. Sometimes you give somebody money and he's down and out and he wants to start a small business. And Baruch Hashem, just you were there just when he needed you. And then he becomes a prosperous person and all the things that he helps and all the things that he accomplishes, it's all there because of that seed that you planted. And that's why we have to become giving people. Because when you become a noisein and you plant seeds, you never know how much can grow from all the apples. Every person who supports the Kailo, could we possibly have imagined 20 years ago that when this Kailo started, that there would be Rabbanim, there would be Chashuvim, there would be people that would not only build a Kailo, but build Torah all over America, and I imagine in Eretz Yisrael as well. That's the pshat, the seeds, that the apples keep growing and they never stop. So I want to tell you a great story. A story that happened with somebody that planted a seed and could never in his wildest dreams have imagined the result of that seed that he planted. There's a Rav in Mansi. His name is Rabbi Chiel Michalchil. It's a wonderful Talmud Chacham. And he tells me that a number of years ago, before you were able to go to Moscow like people can go today, Rav Neustadt has this Vad L'Nitcha Yisrael. He asked him to go to Moscow to teach Torah in basements and hidden places to men and women and to do certain rabbinical functions that had to be done. Rabbi Leo Esses was just leaving Russia at that time and they needed a Rav to come. So he said he would do it and he was there for 3 weeks. Rabbi Chil tells me that there was one fellow. Now this guy, I spoke to him, but he doesn't want I should say his last name, so I won't say, I'll just tell you his first name, Moshe. This fellow, Moshe, was so brilliant that every single place that Rabbi Chil went to teach Torah, this guy was there. If he was teaching Chumash in the morning, he was there. If he was teaching Gemara at night, he was there. He was teaching Tanakh, he was talking Yadus, talking Jewish philosophy. Whatever, Moshe was always there. And he couldn't get enough of it. After 3 weeks, when they realized they had to go back to America, Rabbi Chil embraces this fellow Moshe, and he says, Moshe, I don't know if I'm ever going to see you again. People can't get out of Russia today. And I'm going back to America, but this I promise you, if you ever come to America, I'll do whatever I can to help you. Fine. 6 months later, Rabbi Chil is sitting in his office in Muncie. All of a sudden, he gets a call. Who is it? It's Moshe. Moshe, where are you? He says, Rabbi, I'll tell you the truth, I don't know where I am. All I know is that I'm upstate New York someplace. I'm in a university called Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. And they took away my svarim, they took away my trillion at the border when I left Russia. And I have nothing. Maybe wherever you are, maybe you can come and help me. He said, well, what's a shayla? Of course, I'll be right over. It's 4 hours of a drive from Muncie up straight to Ithaca, New York. He goes to Tuvia's and he buys tefillin and he buys Russian chamashim and he buys Russian sidurim. And Moshe told me he brought him enough food for a month. It's food and drink and dishes and napkins. And he went right up to another fellow, Tzvi Goodman. They drive up 4 hours. They come there, say, Allah Yehudim, this Moshe is so happy. Mamash like Kriyas Amazim. And they're singing and dancing at the Mamashuv Gilev. Fine, and they go, and he's there for 2 hours. Rabbi Chill teaches embroidery. He's 11th grade Rebbe. So he knew he had to get back. So he drove 4 hours, and 2 hours he was there. Now he has to drive back another 4 hours to come back. So by the time he got back, it was 2-3 in the morning. The next morning he comes to his class embroiderers, and a smart Rebbe he is. So he tells the boys, listen, I want to tell you of a wonderful thing that I did last night. And he tells them the whole story with Moshe, how he got to know him in Moscow and everything that he did. And he says, boys, I'm begging you, I'm exhausted, please go easy on me today. But at least he had the seichel to tell the boys in the class the good thing that he did. And I always say, parents, if you're doing something good, always tell your children. To me, it's such a sad thing when Rachmana Litzlan, somebody sitting Shiva, and people say to the Avelim, you know what your father did, and you know what your mother did, and the Avelim sit there, wow, I never knew that. And I feel that's a lost opportunity. The parents, if you do something good, tell it to your children, so that when they get older, they'll also know to do it. You don't have to go brag and tell everybody else, but if you go Erev Yontif before Pesach, and you pay the bill of a Kailo fellow, or you pay the bill of a poor person in the neighborhood in the grocery store, you don't have to tell your children who you paid for, that's embarrassing, but tell them that you did it, so that when they get older, and they're making money, they'll learn to do the same thing. So Rabbi Chill tells all the boys what he did. A year later, a 12th grader who was in his class the year before on the 11th grade comes running in Sunday morning. He says, Rebbe, you won't believe what happened in my shul in Englewood Friday night. He says, what happened? He says, Friday night my father and I came to shul, and my father's always looking for guests, and he sees some guy sitting in the back, a young fellow, looks like he needs a place. So my father goes over to him and he says to him, maybe you need a place for Shabbat? He says, I'll tell you the truth, I'm stuck in Englewood, I need a place to be. If you don't mind, I'd like to come with you. Fine. So the fellow comes and he sits at the table. And this boy, Jeremy Strauss, who tells it over to Rabbi Chill, said, my father said to him, look, I see that you're a Baal Tshuva. Every Baal Tshuva has a story. Every Baal Tshuva has something that turned him around. What's your story? How did you come to Frumkai? He says, I'll tell you. I'm a student in Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Last June, all of a sudden, there's a new Russian roommate, I guess. They open up the door. They say, this is my new roommate. I don't know, he's there an hour or two, he makes a call, 2 hours later, guys come, they bring food, they bring books, they're dancing, they're singing. I never knew that Jews do this kind of stuff. I never saw such love and affection that Jews had for each other. I was so inspired, I figured I gotta find out about my religion. And slowly but surely, that's how he came to Orthodoxy. So this boy says, Rebbe, you thought that you were only helping Moshe, that you brought him food, you wanted to be mechazikim. You don't even realize that another fellow became an Orthodox Jew just because of you, and you don't even realize it. And you know something? I called Moshe. I said to Moshe, how many nights were you the roommate of that fellow? You know what he said? 2 nights. That was it, that he was transferred to another dormitory. So the Eibishter was Masavi Tzivuvim and made it that just those 2 nights, this fellow should be in that room together with Moshe, and this Rabbi Chill gave those seeds, and look at the apples. This fellow, Doris will be saved. That's the shot when you become a nice saint. You never know what can happen. However, while we are here in this beautiful, beautiful hotel in Los Angeles, and we're all sitting together, Ba'achtus and Bereyos, all trying to be inspired, we cannot for a moment forget what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. And every single speech in New York, and I'm sure it's the same way here in Los Angeles and wherever Yidden assemble, every speaker is always trying to tell the Olam, and everyone in the Olam, every man, woman and child, wants to know, how do we respond to what's going on in Eretz Yisrael today? And I believe one of the many ways is a pasuk in Mishlei. In Mishlei Yud Aleph, pasuk Dalet, Lo Yoyil Hoin B'Yom Evra. All your money is not going to help you on the day of wrath. Utzdoka Tatzel Mimoves. Tzdoka saves from death. I believe that Shlomo HaMelech didn't just mean that if a person himself gives tzdoka, that he's going to be saved from death. I believe that Shlomo HaMelech was talking about collective death. That if we want there shouldn't be death and destruction in Klal Yisrael, we have to become giving people. We have to be people that give tzedakah, tremendous amounts of tzedakah. And through that, that tzedakah is tatzel mimoves. The gentleman who was kind enough to introduce me mentioned my closeness to Rav Shalom Shvadron. So I'll tell you something interesting. When Rav Shalom came to the house the first time, of course my father was the one who picked him up at the airport, and Rav Shalom stayed with us for 6 months. That's a whole long story, which is not for now. Rav Shalom went back to Eretz Yisrael. My father went to Eretz Yisrael to meet him. And then, unfortunately, when my father came back from Eretz Yisrael, at that time he became Nebuch very, very ill. I was only 21 at the time, and within a year he passed away. And it was at that time that I had to leave the yeshiva, and I became a moyel, and I was supporting my mother and six younger brothers and sisters. And Avshalom came back to America. We didn't think that he would stay by us, but Adarabba, he said he doesn't want to change the achsanya. This was his place, and he stayed with us. And I spent many, many hours talking to him. And I remember one thing that he told me, which I do literally adayim azeh. He told me, you have to keep a book of every single penny that you earn. You have to have a meiser book. And every dollar that you earn after business expenses, you have to give meiser and give it either every week or every 2 weeks. Don't make it after 6 months because then it becomes too much. The cheshbonos are too big, you're not going to want to do it. But every week or every 2 weeks, you make a cheshbon and you give meiser. But he told me it's something very interesting, which I never knew. And he said that you could even give meiser in advance. What does that mean? Let's say you earn $1,000 after business expenses. So you have to give $100. But now let's say that you come to a dinner like this, and you want to give more than $100. And you give $180, for example, or $5 million, whatever. But, you know, but that's Canadian. But I'm talking American dollars, right? So $180. So now, the next $800 that you give, that you make, you don't really have to give meiser, because you already gave in advance. So I didn't even realize that there's such a thing as giving and keeping a cheshbon of giving money in advance. So recently I spoke to Rav Shimon Schwab's son. He wrote a wonderful sefer. He actually wrote down his father's notes on tefillah. So in the Hakdama of that sefer, he writes, and I called him to verify it, it's Mavel al Arayim. Rav Shimon Schwab kept such a book. Every single year on his birthday he would say, Rabbeinu Shalom, you gave me a new year of life. I know that I'm way ahead of my Maisa Cheshbin, but we're even. I'm starting a new account. Imagine that, the man was maybe thousands of dollars ahead in the Maisa Cheshbin, but yet the Eibishter gave him a new year of life, so he's starting even. I'm not telling you that that's what the halacha is, but you see what taste and Elch Yid and how he treats with Stoka. So wherever I go these days, people are telling me stories. Even tonight, my good friend also, another chaver from Tervidas, or Eliezer Gross, was telling me a story. Wherever I go. And I have to listen to everybody. 98 out of 100 I can't use. But those two are mamish kedai. So I listen to everybody. So I was in Baltimore a few months ago, and a fellow, Rabbi Jonathan Seideman, comes over to me, and he says, you know, I got a great story for you. So I said, okay, fine. I'm ready to listen. He says, you know, I give a shir, he says, to women every Shabbos afternoon. He's a rav in the community, and he gives a shir. Fine. So it's Parshas Truma, and he figured Parshas Truma, he'll give them a shir about Stoka. That's the right thing to talk about Stoka. Fine. So he says, I want to tell you a story about my father-in-law. Who's his father-in-law? Rav Meir Schwab, Rav Shimon's son. Rav Meir Schwab, those of you know, in the West Coast, he has the Beis Yaakov in Denver. He's the menahel, he's the founder and the organizer of the Beis Yaakov in Denver. In Denver, there was a very, very wealthy man, a multi-millionaire. I'm not going to say his name, we'll just call him Max Rabinowitz. And the yeshiva mamish went crazy from him, and the Beis Yaakov went crazy from him. Why? Because the most Max Rabinowitz would ever give was $500. The guy could have given $500,000. But Rav Schwab would beg him, please, Max, what are you going to do with your money? Your children are independently wealthy. What are you going to do with it? The government's going to take it. Said Gunnar Geholfen. The most he would give is $500. One day, Rav Schwab gets a call from Max, and he says, Rebbe, you know, I'm getting older. You know, a person doesn't live forever. So I need you to buy me a siddur that has vidui in it. Vidui is that confessional prayer that a person says before he dies. So Rav Schwab says, okay, fine, I'll buy you the siddur, and whenever you need me, I'll be available. So he buys Rav Yankovem the siddur that has the vidui in it that a person says before he's nifter. And one day he's teaching in class on the Beis Yaakov, and a secretary comes running in. Rabbi Schwab, he got an emergency telephone call. What's the emergency? I'm in the middle of a class, I can't take the call. No, the guy's frantic, he's got to talk to you. He says, who is it? He says, some guy named Max Rabinowitz. So, okay, he comes to the office, he says, Max, what's the problem? He says, Rebbe, I'm dying. And I need you to come to say vidui. He says, I'm in the middle of a class. Can't you wait till tonight? He says, Rebbe, I'm not going to be here by tonight. You got to come now. Okay, so Rav Schwab had no choice. So he closes the sefer, gets a substitute teacher, and he drives out to the hospital. He drives out to the hospital to Mamish Bitte Vigal. He looks pale and frail, and the doctors are there, and the family is all around. And Max sends everybody out of the room. He says, Rebbe, we have to say vidui. And he says, vidui, and it's mamish, very, very moving. after they finished Vidui, he says to Rav Schwab, he says, you know, when I was a little boy, there was a Magid who came to our town. And I don't remember what he said, but there were three words that he did say that still stick to me in my memory. I can't get it out of my head. And those words were, Staka Tatzel Mimoves. Staka Tatzel Mimoves. Charity rescues from death. He says, Rebbe, I don't know where I'm going to be by tonight, but I want to be even with God. So I wrote out two checks. One for you, and one for the yeshiva. And it's in the cabinet. So please take it out of the drawer and make sure that you give it over to the right place. Rav Schwab told me that he couldn't believe. Max came to his senses. Couldn't after all these years. He walked over to that closet and he was positive, he said, that now all his budgetary problems are over. Max, finally, he's going to be even with God. He opens up the drawer, takes out the checks, two checks, $500 each. He couldn't believe it. He mamish couldn't believe it. He turns to Max. He says, Max, what are you doing? Don't you realize the Beisachim was in trailers? Give me $50,000. I'll build a building. I'll put your name on the building. Your children will see you. Finally came to your senses. Listen to what he said. I want to say it in Yiddish because it's so geschmack in Yiddish. And then for those of you who don't know, I'll translate. Max says like this, Rebbe, the hearts will und der Kopf versteht, aber der Hand lässt sich nicht öffnen. Could you imagine? The heart wants and the head understands, but the hands won't let themselves be open. And wouldn't you know it, he died that night, only giving the $500. So when Rabbi Seideman told this story to the women in Baltimore, one of the women says, Rabbi, you told us this story already. He says, I told you this story? When did I tell you this story? She says, 3 years ago. She says, 3 years ago? You still remember it? She says, Rabbi, I owe you an apology. Because something happened because you told us that story, but I never told you. So what happened? And of course, I called this lady as well. So Mrs. Greta Rosen, she worked in Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. World famous hospital. She worked in the international department. And what happened? Her job was that when people come from all over the world, she would tell them which doctors they had to see depending on the illness. So that week that she heard the story, a couple comes from Eretz Yisrael with an 8-year-old boy, an Israeli. 8-year-old boy, Nebuchadnezzar, needs a very serious operation. And they're talking to her and she's trying to tell them which doctors to go to. But they say, Mrs. Rosen, we don't have money for this operation. Is there any way that you could help us? She says, you know, I'm here with the medical records. Like, you know, I'm supposed to tell you which doctors to go to. And she's looking through the records. All of a sudden she sees a letter in the file that has nothing to do with medicine. So she says, excuse me, what's this letter? So they tell her, you know, we heard that there's a very wealthy man in New York. And people told us we should write him a letter because he's a millionaire and he gives a lot of money. He gives a lot of charity. So we wrote him a letter. Well, of course, we had it translated into English. And this is what he wrote us back. He writes, dear family, I'm so sorry to hear about your illness of your little son. May God help that he has a complete healing. But at this moment, I'm sorry, I can't be of assistance. And he signs his name. Listen to what Mrs. Rosen does. She writes this fellow a letter. And she tells him the whole story of Max Rabinowitz. And then the last sentence in the letter, she says, don't let that man be you. And the next week, she got a check from that fellow for $40,000. The guy paid for the whole operation. That's venosno. That's caring. Do you know Rabbeinu Bechaya tells us something so fascinating? Did we ever wonder, why is Leisachmai the 10th of the Aseret HaDibros? It could have been the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, Leisizdoch, Leisinov. What's the difference? What order it's in? Listen to what Rabbeinu Bechaya writes. Being if a person is that type of person who's jealous and envious of other people's money, that he's going to be jealous of his own money, he'll be so possessive that he's not going to give meiser. That's the reason when you go to shul next time and you see the Aron Kodesh with that Aseret HaDibros, take a look at Leisachmai and let it be a reminder that you got to give Meiser. Lehizor ala Meiser. Every single one of us must make a commitment not only to Tzedakah but to Meiser and to keep a very, very exact cheshbon. I'll tell you a fascinating medrash. The Medrash Rabbah in Bamidbar. It tells us, why are possessions called nechosim? Lekach nikra shemom nechosim, shenichsim mizeh v'niglin mizeh. They vanish from one and they get revealed to others. Nobody holds on to it forever. You have money, you have it for a while, but you're not going to have it forever. Nobody has it forever.
Why in Chazal is the dollar or is money called Zuzin?
It moves from one to the other.
Why is it called Mamayin? Mo'atamayna, what are you counting? What do you think? You're going to have it forever?
And why is it called Mo'ais, money, Mala Ais? What are you making such a big deal? It's only temporary. So if you're not going to hold on to it, but you want to hold on to it. So the way you hold on to it is Vinosnu. If you give, and you give time and encouragement and money, all those things that you give, you're going to get back. Davish is going to make sure that you get it back. I just want to end with this great story and a great thought. Recently in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, on a Friday night, there was a fellow who made a Shalom Zachar. Now this fellow hadn't had children in 15 years. It's his first child. And of course it was a tremendous simcha, so he thought, 100, 150 people are going to come to the Shalom Zachar. Lamaisa, over 400 people came. Every shul in Yerushalayim, everybody who knew him, everybody who heard about it, like Yehudim, it was unbelievable. Of course, the guy ran out of food in no time. You know, 450 people, you know, how much arbus can you store? Even if you go to the arbus gemach. So Lamaisa, fine, everybody's sitting around. He says, you know something, Rabbi Sai? I'm going to tell you the story. And he tells the following story. He says, I want you to know that for many, many years, you all know my wife and I, he says, didn't have children. And finally, one of the doctors told us that we should go to Australia. There's a certain process, a certain treatment, a medical treatment that they have in Australia. And that's our last hope. And we took a went, and we were there for a while, and it didn't work. And we came back, and we were on the plane back to Eretz Yisrael, and we were both crying. And I was thinking a thought, he says, that I have thought 100, if not 1,000 times before. Why did this happen to me? Why did the Eibishter make it that I don't have children? And he said, suddenly a thought came into my head. I could not believe that I never thought about this before. He said, I remember many years ago when I was a bachur in the yeshiva, that there was an almana that used to come to clean in the afternoons. She was very poor. She was a young woman. She had a few little children. And she couldn't afford a babysitter. So she used to bring her children, and they would run around the Beis Medrash. And the children, they were little children, but they disturbed everyone. So somebody had to go and tell her, listen, you know, you're coming to clean, but you just can't bring the kids because it's disruptive. And we were sitting in the Beis Medrash, and we were trying to figure out who should tell her. And I was the one that was elected to tell her. And I went over to her, and I said to her, you know, I feel bad for you, but, you know, you're bringing your children, and they're really disruptive. And maybe you could somehow make some sort of another arrangement. And the lady said to me, you should never know from Tzar Gidol Bonin. And all of a sudden, when I was on the plane, it occurred to me that that lady meant it as a bracha to me, that I shouldn't know from Tzar Gidol Bonin, I should have wonderful children. But I was mitzayer that almana. And maybe the Rabbeinu Shel Olam heard her ways, heard her words in a way that I didn't hear it. When she said, I shouldn't have Tzar Gidol Bonin by not having children, a person also doesn't have Tzar Gidol Bonin. So when I came back to Eretz Yisrael, I called that yeshiva that I went to. And I said, where is that lady? They didn't know where. How? Who keeps a record of a cleaning lady 15 years in the past? And I said, you've got to find her for me. We've got to find this lady. And finally, we were able to locate her. She's a nursing home someplace. And I went to see her, and I went over to her, and I was crying, and I said, please be Michael. And she says, what's willst du von mir? Wer bist du? Who are you? What do you want? What did you ever do to me? She said, don't you remember? He said, you came to the yeshiva and used to clean, and I made a comment to you. I don't remember you even saying anything. He says, but I bet you, please be Michael. And she was a Yiddish lady, a nice Yiddish lady. Her children were already married. And she said, if we did Moichel mit God's in hearts. And he said, when he walked out of that nursing home, he felt that there was a major stone that was off his heart. And sure enough, a year later, he had this child. How did that happen? You know, I believe it happened. They were ke'ish echad and b'lev echad. He felt the pain of that lady all the years later. And she felt his pain. And she said, ich bin der Moichel mit dem ganzen Herz.
When Klal Yisrael was given the Torah tells us, Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar. It should have said, Vayachanu, or Lashon Rabim. Vayichan, Lashon Yochid, Zok Rashi, Ki Ish Echad, B'Lev Echad. One man, one heart. That's how we zoichat the Kabbalah Tatayra. We all know the famous Chazal, Kimu V'Kiblu. Kimu by Purim Masha Kiblu Kfar. They were accepted what they once accepted in previous years. So Rav David asks, why is the Lashon Yochid? The Teretz is, the only way to be makabel the Torah is Vayichan Sham Yisrael. Ki ish echad v'lev echad. So Memelech is a Kabbalah at Torah again. At Purim, it has to be Kibel. It has to be the Lashon Yochid. And that's what we have to learn. We have to learn as we go to Purim. What's the inyan of Mishloach Monei Tish L'Rayeyu? Is it just Stam to be friendly? It's more than that. It has a much deeper meaning. Purim is the inyan of Kabbalah Satayra again. Purim is the inyan of Achzaka Satayra again. But it can only go if we care for each other. And we care and we're involved in each other's project as one. That's why it's Vayichan. And that's why it's Kimu V'Kibel. B'Lashon Yochid. And so I just want to end with this beautiful pasuk in Yeshaya Nun Hei Yud Beis that tells us what it'll be when Mashiach comes. You will go out of Golus with gladness, and you will arrive with Shalom. The mountains and the hills, they will break out in song. So the Medrash says, who are the mountains? Who are the hills? Zok the Medrash, Ahorim Elu Ha'avos. That's Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They are our harim, our mountains that we look up to and we try to climb their levels. When they see that we're coming back to Eretz Yisrael after the Golus, how happy they'll be. Who are the voice, the hills, that's the Moy, Sarah Rivka, Rachav, Aleya. How happy they will be. But I want to know, who are the Atzei Asoda? The Chol Atzei Asoda Yimchal Chof. And I believe the Atzei Asoda are the apples that will grow from our seeds. All those apples that grow from the seeds of chesed, from the seeds of achdus, from the seeds of caring for each other, all those will produce beautiful proverbial trees, and that it'll be b'chol atzei asoda yimchal chof. We've come tonight to be mazik Torah, to be mazik a tremendous koilel that has peiros all over the world, and will continue to have peiros. The Eibush should help that we should learn the lessons of giving, that the Eibush in return should give us what we want more than anything else. And that's Mashiach and Shalom in Eretz Yisrael. We should be Zoicha with Freilich HaHertzav and HaHapachu. We should be able to see in the month of Adar and Nisan Mashiach. Thank you for inviting me and thank you for listening.